Sona, this was a very nice day today.
It was.
Because over here at our headquarters, we got this great gift, Tillamook ice cream. Yes. I'm a monster for ice cream. I know you are too.
I want to take a bath in it, and then I want to eat the bath.
Wait, what?
I want to like bathe in it, yeah. But then I want to eat it as I'm bathing in
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's a simple concept. You made it much more complicated.
I know, I'm sorry.
Fill a bathtub with Tillamook ice cream. I will get in it, and then I will eat my way out.
Yes,
that's all
okay,
you need to
there
do.
There we go. Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
They have so many great, it's such good ice cream, and they have so many great flavors. I mean, just off the top of my head, I don't know. Birthday cake, caramel swirl, banana split, caramel toffee crunch, chocolate chip cookie dough. I think there's butter pecan, cookies and cream, French vanilla, chocolate peanut butter. Malted mousse shake, I think, is one. I can't remember too well. Mounted huckleberry, Tillamook mudslide, Marionberry pie, monster cookie, old fashioned vanilla, Rocky Road, Oregon dark cherry, waffle cone swirl, peppermint bark. I'm just going off memory here, but holiday sugar cookie, orange and cream. Anyway, so many great flavors and just incredible. You know, they really put, and they come in family size cartons.
Mm.
Also, you're in good hands with the Tillamook brand. They make over 200 different dairy products, and the brand is farmer owned and led by dairy experts. Find Tillamook ice cream near you at Tillamook.com. I'm going to spell it for you. That's how much I care about this product. Tillamook.com. Sona, how's your sock drawer looking?
It's messy. There's a lot of single socks.
Yep. I think it's time for a little spring cleaning.
Oh. That's awful.
Check out Bombas. Once you try a pair, you'll never look at socks the same way again. I should know. I like my Bombas. Their spring collection has new garden party socks that bring the party to your feet. My feet have never been to a party. They've
so
got
sad.
Stripes and florals and new vintagey colored rib socks. You know, when I'm wearing Bombas, I feel like my feet are being caressed
okay. And
cared for in a way they never have been in my life.
Hmm.
Get comfy this spring and give back with Bombas. Head over to bombas.com/Conan and use code Conan for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com/Conan and use code Conan at checkout.
Hi, my name is Gary Goldman, and I feel ecstatic about being Conan O'Brien's friend.
That's very sweet.
And I feel like I wouldn't be that irritating.
Well, okay, now wait a minute. Now I have reservations.
Fall is here, hear the yell, back to school, ring the bell. Brand new shoes, walking blues, climb the fence, books and pens. I can tell that we are gonna be friends. Yes, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hey there. Welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, joined by Sona Movsesyan. Hey, Sona.
Hi.
Matt Gourley, how are you, sir?
Merry Christmas.
Well, I was going to get to that.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
You think I wouldn't get to that? Uh-huh. I have to say, I do get the Christmas spirit.
Do you?
Yeah.
Are you sick?
What?
I'm sorry.
No, I think it's normal.
I just saw this DayQuil thing. Are you sick? Sorry.
I thought it was because you had the Christmas spirit and you're like, you're a
Scrooge. I got sick too after we got back from New York.
Okay, that made no sense to our listeners.
I'm sorry.
This is what our listeners heard. I have the Christmas spirit. Are you sick?
That's what I heard.
Yeah, that's what I heard too.
Yeah.
And you just, I had a cold, I got a cold about a week ago. I don't have it anymore, but I still take these.
Okay.
To just make my voice sound a little better on air.
Yeah.
As a son of an infectious disease doctor, no. Mm. Easily 11 days after having a cold, I'm a threat to no one, if that's your fear.
I'm not. I got sick too. That's why I was like, hey, we all got.
Well, if you're sick, you shouldn't have come in.
Okay.
Merry Christmas, everyone. It's literally Christmas Day when people are listening
lot,
to this.
Sona.
What did I do?
You killed Christmas.
I had a nice Christmas thing, and then I started to say, hey, I have the Christmas spirit. You're sick? You sick fuck. How dare you have the Christmas spirit?
You pervert.
You pervert. What does that mean to you? Did you watch some Christmas pervy porn? You sick fuck.
Well, I was on your side, and now I'm wondering, what did you watch?
What?
Why do you have the Christmas spirit? Because of Christmas pervy porn?
It's Mrs. Claus.
No, stop. Don't do it. Don't do it.
This is where your line is?
She's got a slamming bod, and then there's a knock at the door, and she thinks it's an elf, but it's a pizza delivery.
What are
and
you
she's
doing?
Like, I expected an elf, but I forgot that I ordered a pizza. And he says, yeah, extra sausage. And she says, what? I don't like sausage. And he said, no, that's double entendre for dick. And she's like, no, I just don't like sausage. And he said, there's no sausage, Mrs. Claus. That's the thing you say when you're about to, you know, take out the penis.
Oh.
Well, just so we're clear, there's no sausage.
This is the worst porn I've ever seen.
Where's Santa? Is he out on his mission?
Santa is so sick of Mrs. Claus misunderstanding double entendre that he just doesn't even have much of a life with her anymore.
Okay, I see.
Because he's whenever he's trying to be romantic, yeah. You know?
Oh, man.
Yeah, he'll like just say some harmless double entendre.
Like, check out this North Pole.
Yeah, yeah. Check out this North Pole. Uh-huh. And she's like, we're at the North Pole. Why would I have to check it out? We live here. And he's like, no, I'm telling you, Sandra. That's Mrs. Claus's real name.
Is it?
No, Sandra. We haven't had sex in a while, and I thought maybe to spice things up, I'd say check out this North Pole. But what do you mean? We're at the North. No, I meant my blood-engorged cock. That's all. I'm trying to put some spice. But wait a minute. Why did you say North Pole? Because the pole is my literal anatomical pole. Oh, God damn it, Sandra. I'm going back to the workshop. I'm going to go fuck a birdhouse. Well, Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, you old savings and loan.
God bless us, everyone.
Oh, my God. That gets people in the spirit right there. Now, listen, I want to understand something because I know that is Christmas celebrated at a different time of year in the Armenian calendar?
Yes. Well, it's the Orthodox Christmas,
right,
which is January 6th.
Right.
What's that mean exactly?
Don't ask me.
Yeah, but what I would say—
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Know this because, you know, Sona started working for me and I was, I think, was pretty nice. I'd give you a nice Christmas gift, okay, and I'd get nothing back. And she would say, yeah, I'll get you an Armenian Christmas. And I thought that for a while that was an excuse. Like, yeah, maybe I'll get you something, maybe I won't. But then it turned out you always did give me really nice gifts just later on. Yeah.
It's better because you don't have to deal with the Christmas rush. And then you have a lot of sales after
deep discount
after Christmas. Yeah. So it always worked out. And it gave me more time to do things.
Yeah.
But we celebrate both.
Oh, you do both?
Oh, yeah, convenient. Yeah, yeah.
That always used to make me, I had friends who would celebrate Hanukkah, but also Christmas. And I thought, come on.
Well, as a children of divorced parents, I got two Christmases, which, you know, was a silver lining.
Oh,
you'll be okay. You seem to turn out just fine.
Did I?
You're
did
not
I?
A weird guy at all.
Okay, good.
No, you seem fine.
I thought maybe I was.
No.
Oh, God.
No.
Oh, God.
No.
They'll get back together.
Yeah, sure they will.
They'll get back together. It's literally been 43 years.
There's a good, healthy reason why you spent a lot of your life working at an amusement park.
Oh, this Christmas is the one.
To create the joy artificially that you couldn't have.
Oh, it's so personal.
I'm at the happiest place on earth, so I must be happy.
Any day now. Any day
here
now.
Here comes my dad. Your dad is goofy? Oh, no.
My dad did work at Disney, though. He met Walt Disney.
Did he really?
Yeah.
What was that like? Well, that's a cool story.
Awesome, yeah. But I'm a second generation Disney employee.
Okay, don't worry about it. Listen.
Oh, God, help me.
It's fine. I'm sure you...
Oh, God, please don't let my daughter work there.
She's working there now.
Oh, God.
Oh, no, she's just a baby. Listen.
Yes.
I'm... What are you doing?
I'm just writing rap for when it's time to rap. You
I know, but you wrote
that.
It ahead of time. And also...
Well, Christmas rap.
Did you hear that? Did you hear him writing?
I did hear the scribble.
Oh. Yeah. When you... Listen, I haven't been in this business long, and you're Mr. Podcast, and you wrote with a ballpoint pen on a hard surface, and it sounds like a...
That's because when you're Mr. Podcast, you're not Mr. Radio, and all rules are out the window, man. It's the Wild West. You can write on a podcast.
You're going to leave that in.
You can edit it out.
No, he's going to keep it in because this is me busting him on. You threw me off. I am a an artist.
Oh God!
And this is my medium.
Oh, okay.
No, I am.
Now you threw me off.
Oh, okay. That's nice. Was that your sleeping?
I was snoring. Sorry.
That's terrible.
I fell asleep while you were talking about being an artist.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, I hope, I'm glad you're awake now because as an artist. It will always make me laugh that the Three Stooges snore in unison, like in synchronized ways. Yeah. It's just, I don't know.
It's gold.
It's just gold. And anyone who disagrees should never judge comedy.
Oh.
Sona.
Sorry, Sona.
Well, I didn't say I didn't like it.
Yeah,
why do you just
it was
assume?
Implied.
Well, you didn't laugh, but you can laugh on Armenian Christmas.
Well, okay. Oh, my God. So, no, I like it, too.
Are your kids going to, on the 25th, will Santa visit your kids?
Yeah.
Okay, but then he'll also show up on the. Does Santa show up on the 6th?
He doesn't really show up on the 6th.
An Armenian figure who shows up.
No, we say we go to church, but we don't.
Is there an Armenian Santa?
No,
like a equivalent,
like a Gahan Baba.
Is it January 6th, Three Kings Day? Isn't that why?
Don't ask me the specifics.
Armenians. We should have been asking Eduardo. Yeah, yeah. This
Eduardo
whole time.
Knows better than I do. Eduardo is married to an Armenian woman.
Yeah, and apparently one who cares about the religion and the heritage.
She doesn't.
Okay, but
tell us what you know.
Well, January 6th is Dia de los Reyes. Well, in Spanish, Dia de los Reyes, the Three Kings. That's when they bring gifts.
Yes.
The wisest. Was that when Jesus really got his gold, frankincense, and myrrh or something?
Correct.
Okay. Many conservatives say that what happened on the Capitol on January 6th was just people celebrating.
Okay. No, don't connect it.
Listen, that is a theory.
Don't connect
that,
it.
That people were so whipped up about Armenian Christmas that they wanted to gather together and celebrate.
Don't
and they thought, hey, let's go into the Capitol. And hey, the door's locked. Well, we can probably push it open.
Wrap!
Let's push it open.
Wrap it!
January 6th was an Armenian hoax!
I hear those sleigh bells ringing and jing jing.
Let's go back to Disneyland.
No, we're good. Man, that was an insane opening.
So stupid.
Stupid, but also in its own way, really stupid.
You are an artist.
I am an artist. My very excited about our guest today because he is an absolutely hilarious comedian. He's ingenious. I will say that. That's a good word for this man. He is ingenious, whose latest stand-up special, Born on Third Base, is now streaming on Max. He also has a new memoir entitled Misfit, Growing Up Awkward in the 80s. He's a delight. He's a fascinating guy, brilliant. Gary Gulman, welcome. I'm going to start by paying you a compliment, which is a gentleman who worked for me for, God, almost, 30 years is Brian Kiley. And Brian Kiley, I adore because he's the best joke writer I've ever known, one-liner joke writer.
Yeah.
And also just a great guy and
the kindest, most generous,
minus just but
best
writes
friend.
But yeah. writes a deadly joke. Like he can just make an ice bullet of a joke, and it's beautifully. And I'll tell you, Brian Kiley has always raved about you.
Oh wow!
Even before I really got to know you,
he was
like,
so nice.
"Gary Gulman is such a good." And then I started watching your. We had you on the show. You did what became this viral sensation. You did this bit about how the states
got their abbreviations.
Yeah. And what I remember is the architecture and the thought that went into it. You're so goddamn smart and the intricacy of it, and just immediately thought, who is this guy? This guy's fantastic.
Wow. Oh,
and then, of
so
course,
nice.
You know, I keep checking your clip from your appearance on your show where you did this. Millions and millions and millions of people keep seeing that
and
keep going back to it. And it's it makes me very happy that so many people now have joined the cult, because it is a cult of Gary Gulman.
Yes, and that you've there are no questions allowed.
No questions allowed.
They have to follow and you my have orders.
Yes. And you have certain rights with the other women in the cult.
Whoa.
Well, he does. Because he wears the red robe and everyone else wears the blue robe. Well, come on. This is cult 101.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Sorry.
I'm interested.
Oh, you're in, buddy.
Uh-oh.
You and I have a bunch of things to talk about.
Okay.
First of all, I want to compliment you in another way, which is you have a stand-up special which has dropped literally 2 days ago, I think. Okay, now everyone's correcting me with 4. Oh, great, because we would have had a lot of calls. Why did you guys have to correct me on that?
Because you were looking at us like, am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah, just say yeah, sure.
Okay, yeah,
close
sure.
enough, idiot. Yeah. That's all I need.
You were wrong.
It's just wrong with a soft
don't
G.
Don't do it here now.
It's not
don't
wrong
do it here now. Don't okay. do it in front of Gary, please.
Okay.
Don't you mean Jerry?
Yeah. Born on born on third base yes. is your stand-up special, and it's hilarious. Now, well, full you. Disclosure, I'm such a fan that I had some involvement with my people in helping to bring this to reality. But I'm saying this as someone who hates himself.
How can so that be?
I'd be more than happy to shit on it if I could. it's really, really funny and beautifully
you.
Done.
Thank you.
It's really nice. And so I'm congratulations.
Well, I had a lot of fun touring it, and the people liked it, and I shot it in Toronto, where they're just so nice and really love comedy and some.
Oh my God, Canada!
Very grateful.
Toronto. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
That's where my ghost is going to go when it roams the earth. Doing bits, it's going to go up to Toronto
because they have the best taste and they're so nice.
They're really smart and they laugh yeah. and they're fun.
Yeah.
And what's wrong? Why are you looking at me
no,
like
I
that?
Just what a weird thing to say.
I don't want
to
go up.
Your ghost is going to go to Toronto and you're just going to do bits.
Yeah, I don't want to go to heaven. Heaven
okay,
sounds boring.
Okay, you just want to go stuck up. In like this purgatory.
I don't want to go talk to Eleanor Roosevelt on a cloud. I want to go what? Up to Toronto and do bits, and then go to a cool restaurant
but
afterwards.
Wouldn't heaven, by definition, be a bunch of people who love your bits?
Yeah.
No, I don't like that.
Okay,
that seems patronizing. I wouldn't like that.
But okay. You think I'm sorry? Just going back to this, you think you're going to go to Toronto? You're going to appear as a ghost, and people are just going to be like, "Let's see what bits he has."
Yes. What's the Gary, if you were in Toronto and you knew that I had passed away in the last year or two and you heard that my ghost was in Toronto and he was doing bits somewhere, wouldn't you check him out?
I would check him out, and then I would also spend a lot of time seeing Rush.
Yeah.
But no, in this scenario, they're dead too. But they're also playing.
No. This is my idea of heaven. Rush is touring, and Conan is doing stand-up associated with it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we're also spending time breaking down some of the licks, the guitar licks and things like that, yeah. And also the
I love
the,
it.
The drum solos.
This man just, gets me.
This okay. is, yeah.
Now listen, it makes sense.
Gary, you are a fellow Massachusetts masshole yes. like
Peabody.
Myself. You're from
yes.
Peabody.
Yes.
You know, you talk about this a lot in your special, and you've touched on it before, but it really does inform a lot of your comedy, which is, I think, quite beautiful. But you grew up poor. You grew up, there's yeah. no other way to say
yeah,
it. You
we
grew
were
up poor.
Yeah, we were broke Jewish people, which people think, oh, that's a thing. And but it really, most of us, especially in that time of in the 70s, a lot of people were broke. So yes, half the Jews would be broke too, right? Everybody right. was. Yeah, so, and that informed me. It also, it developed my personality in terms of my resentment towards certain kids growing up who had more than us, and it didn't have to be much. It could be an above ground pool, and I would be like, "Oh, look at the opulence! these people, they don't know what it is to struggle." And Christmas used to just blow me away. These kids would just get so much for Christmas,
right? Right.
And I would get a thing, eight nights of a thing, but some of them were practical, which you don't want for holidays.
Like what? Well, give me an example of a practical Hanukkah gift.
I remember everybody says socks, but I would get pajamas, which mm-hmm. I very rarely wore.
Right.
It was either freezing cold in my house, which required an electric blanket, which I can't even believe those things were legal at the time. They were just fire starters, but also
you
could be electrocuted.
I just know this in Massachusetts, but every time a house burned down.
Yes.
In the 50s, 60s, or 70s, it was, you'd see firemen walking
yeah.
away afterwards.
Yeah.
Because I'd hang out at these things, and they'd always, as a true arsonist does.
Yes.
But they'd always be like shaking their heads going, yeah. and you'd always read in the paper that it was an electric yeah. blanket.
An electric blanket, or there would be a fire chief holding up a melted Light Bright.
Yes, yes.
And it would be, hopefully it would be the clown, because the clown face would melt into a frown.
Yeah.
Because he was upset by this as well.
Yeah,
the
yeah,
clown,
sure.
Not just
yeah.
the fire chief.
Yeah.
But yeah, those were the two biggest fire causes,
Because what
I think,
could
in
go
the
wrong
70s.
If you took mid-20th century knowledge of electrical wiring and ran it through a bunch of cotton and nylon? Like, yeah. what could go wrong?
Yeah. yeah. In the
and then you go to sleep
the driest
and
time
just
of
crank, yeah. and crank this thing.
Yes.
So people would just burst into flames.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you grow up in Peabody, and what's interesting is you said that it gave you a completely different perspective than a lot of kids have when you grew up not having. Grew up not having stuff. And so that you knew just by rote what things cost.
Oh, yes.
And you had that all down, which you said, when you don't have money, you know all of this stuff.
Yes. That's what always irritated me. I remember I had this neighbor who went to a summer camp. And I was interested in it because he came back with this is a phenomenon of Jewish summer camps where these kids who were kind of average athletics and attractiveness would go to summer camp and they would walk taller when they returned because they had culled all the Gentile kids from the group. So it was just the Jews were standing out, and the only choice the girls had or the boys had were other Jewish people. So that there was this thing, and they would be so confident because they had made out with a girl over the summer where they weren't getting any makeout sessions in junior high or seventh grade or anything. And then they would come back in the fall and they had more confidence. And I envied this. And I remember asking the kid, well, how much does this thing cost? He says, I don't know. Why would I know how much things cost? And I said, oh, you would ask for something and your parents would tell you, no, we can't afford it. And then they would tell you how much everything costs.
Yeah. So you knew how much everything.
Yeah. I remember I wanted this robot called 2XL, which was really just an 8-track player that they had somehow.
Oh, yeah.
It was a brilliant thing where it would ask you questions and it was a trivia thing and you got informed. And it was $54.87 in Toys R Us, where my mom worked at the mall. Mm-hmm. And she couldn't afford a babysitter, so I would, at 9 years old, walk around the mall for 3 hours
Whoa.
While she worked. And then when the boss left, I could go in there and hang out at the stationery store. But I would walk around, hang around at Toys R Us, and at Sears, you could play the Atari for a while. And then the Orange Julius kids would give me free Julii.
I love that you did the plural of Julius. That makes me so happy.
This sounds like heaven.
It was incredible.
Did you ever have fried octopi with your Julii?
So I was like the mall mascot, basically.
Yeah, sure.
And I would hang out at the Toys R Us, and there was this robot called 2XL, and I knew it was $54.87, and I would every year I would ask for it, and then I also would ask people if I could borrow $54.87. Which is so specific, but I hadn't worked out the fact that it would probably be 5% tax, and also the parents would always say $55, but kids would always know that there was $54.87.
Sure.
That was a big kid thing. So I think.
Did you ever get it?
I did get it. My mom, there was a neighbor who got it and outgrew it several years later, and my mom bought it used from them and gave it to me for my birthday, and it worked 100%, just the box was damaged because it had been opened.
I remember Christmas as being perilous, meaning something great could happen, but also if you're one of six,
wow,
you can get lost in the show. And Santa's busy because he's working at the microbiology lab. And sometimes Santa has a short fuse.
Oh, no.
Anyway, I remember once we had this tradition where we're asleep and Santa would put the gifts, they weren't wrapped, but they would just, each one of the kids in the family had has a piece of furniture in the living room. This is where my parents still live, mind you.
Wow.
In Brookline, Mass. And there's a different piece of furniture and Luke's toys would go on a chair. And most people had a chair, and then mine just arbitrarily became, there's this long white couch.
Mm-hmm.
Now think about it. Everything looks tiny and insignificant on a long white couch. And Santa's busy and there's a lot to do. So there were years where Santa's like, okay, I got Neil covered. I got Luke. I got Jane. I got Justin. And then he's down there and he's throwing stuff around. He's like, I got to get back to the lab. I think that germ got out. And then, you know, I've been working on something called COVID. I hope it's... But anyway, that was my dad. Anyway, and so he would be, there was one Christmas where I think he was throwing everything around and then he got to the giant white couch and there was some socks and there wasn't much. So I'll never forget that was the year he got a toboggan, like for everyone to share. But I come running downstairs and I see this giant toboggan filling out the couch. And I'm like, I got a toboggan? This is insane. And I'll never forget, my dad went, interesting. Santa told me on his way out that it's actually for everyone. Oh. And I went, huh? But it's like the one thing that's on my couch. And he went, Santa said it, you kind of get to be in charge of it, but it's for everyone.
Oh.
And I'm like, first of all, you're having a legal conversation with Santa about ownership. And then how are you in charge of a toboggan? I get to decide who sits where.
But that,
but hey, I got over it. I'm 60 and bitching about it on a podcast.
It's that really tracks with the socialism of 1970s Massachusetts.
Oh my God.
Though.
And I still, to this day, when I go home and that white couch is still there.
Oh, really?
And I'll still look at it and I'll be like, fucking toboggan. There was a toboggan and then like some Post-its and some socks.
Oh my God.
And an electric blanket. And then, you know. Like, what kind of. Anyway, enough about me.
Man.
I'm just saying we all suffer. You know, it's only a matter of time until your check engine light comes on, which could equal an expensive repair bill, and a new engine can cost up to $6,000.
Don't I know it?
But this is why you need this product I'm about to mention right now.
Okay.
CarShield. Mm. CarShield offers plans with low monthly rates that you can pay for your expensive repairs on your out-of-warranty car, truck, or SUV. It's so nice to have that protection of CarShield.
I know.
I believe. That's my belief. Some people have other beliefs, maybe religious beliefs. I think CarShield. CarShield plans provide protection on up to 5,000 major parts and systems, including items like transmission, engine, even your entertainment system. Mm. Just call CarShield and choose the mechanic to do the work. CarShield administrators will handle the rest and save you money. Look, I saw your car today. You've got a beautiful car, but you've got to haul your family around in this car. This is a vital piece of machinery for you. You need CarShield.
I do. And, you know, I don't take care of my cars very well. So CarShield, it would definitely come in.
You know, and also with their A rating from the BBB, don't ask me, CarShield is the name you can trust to save you money on covered auto repairs. Now's the time to make the smart choice to protect yourself from the sky-high auto repair bills. Visit CarShield.com/Conan. Save 20% today. Again, that's CarShield.com/Conan to save 20%. Visit carshield.com/Conan to lock in your price today. Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend is sponsored by ADT, introducing ADT Self-Setup, featuring everything from motion sensors to Google Nest Cam and the Nest doorbell with a battery or wired option. Your choice. Easily install the ADT self-setup security system at your convenience. You don't need heavy-duty tools. And if you do need help, ADT can provide virtual assistance along the way. Self-setup from ADT grows, moves, and adapts as your needs change. You can add more products at any time, and your system easily moves wherever life takes you. It also features Nest Cams that can tell the difference between a person, an animal, a vehicle, or with the Nest doorbell, even a package. These things are getting so smart. Plus, when every second counts, you can trust ADT's 24/7 professional monitoring. You can view video of an alarm event and verify or cancel an alarm with just one quick tap. Now everyone can get trusted security from ADT installed your way with no long-term contracts. When the most trusted name in home security adds the intelligence of Google, well, you've got a home with no worries. Go to ADT.com today or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP. Google, Nest Cam, Nest Doorbell, and Nest Aware are all trademarks of Google LLC. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. This is unbelievable. I've been talking about this idea for years.
I know. I want you to explain it more.
I can.
Okay.
With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. I had this idea years ago. I was telling people, no one listened to me. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems. Remember when I said that?
Yeah.
Because you've got one unified business management suite.
You said that.
Yeah. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math, man.
Yeah.
See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Conan, netsuite.com/Conan. I'm going to say it one more time just for emphasis. netsuite.com/Conan.
I remember one year I did get a bunch of Dungeons and Dragons books.
And you talk about this.
Yeah.
You talk about this in the special. Yeah.
Hackett's books. But unfortunately, it came with all these dice and the maps and everything like that, but it didn't come with any friends. And that is the greatest oversight of the TSR company was that, yeah, kids who are into this stuff are lonely.
Yes, yeah. The other thing it says, your word choice is always so good as a comic. And in the special, you said, I think you said, no one could foresee this. You said something like that. But it didn't come with friends. Like, yeah. You've talked about, I can kind of relate to this. You have kind of an OCD about honesty.
Oy.
And I had this too growing up, which is, it was very important to my mom that we all be thought of well.
Yeah.
One of the things I remembered is we'd all be gathered around Christmas, Thanksgiving, and we have company over, or anytime company was coming and we got to sit in the dining room and people are sitting around, she'd say, and now, of course, we always say grace. And I'd say, we only do this when company's here.
Oh, no.
And she would say, that's not true.
Oh, that's so good.
But I mean, I just couldn't not.
Yeah, the dishonesty, part of it is I grew up always feeling God was watching me all the time just because of I just took everything everybody told me seriously so that I would act up in the house. I would stub my toe on the corner of a counter. That doesn't make sense. Not a counter, a cabinet. And my mother would say, see, God punished you. And I was like, oh, my gosh. Instead of thinking, gosh, what a prick, I would think, oh, I better not act up.
I used to think, doesn't God have other things to do? Hey, Goldman just got out of line. Yeah. Give him the old stubberoo. Yeah. Hey, what about that? What about that tsunami that just wiped out 3,000 people in Indonesia? Oh, I was dealing with Goldman.
And then I went to Hebrew school. I don't know if you went to Catholic.
I went to Hebrew school.
Yeah.
I was immediately asked to leave. No, I went to Catholic instruction, actually, with Brian Kiley.
Oh, that's so interesting. Yeah. So I would go to Hebrew school, and they would say, well, this is a sin, adultery and coveting, being jealous and bearing false witness. And are there any others? Yes, leaving the finger paints out, is that also a sin that God that God will smite you for? But playing with clay without permission, that's another one that God punished me for. It was just the things I was learning in Hebrew school were not matching up with the little I had learned at home.
Am I correct that there's probably really not much difference between if you're a kid Hebrew instruction and if you're a kid Catholic instruction, meaning they're both leaning on guilt,
yes,
beware,
oh my
watch
gosh,
out,
yes,
someone's watching.
Yes.
Because that was my experience. Yeah. And then the few times that, well, actually, I grew up in Brookline. More of my friends were Jewish than were Irish Catholic.
Sure.
And I would sense that, wait a minute, this is supposed to be a completely alien religion.
Yeah.
This is all sounding pretty familiar to me.
Totally. I went to a Catholic college. I went to Boston College, and mm-hmm. I befriended some Jesuit priests, and they would say, yeah, there's a lot of intersection in our liturgy. Not so much the words as much as the ideas and the where the stresses are, which is on a very angry, judgmental God. And then, but as a lot of fathers do when they have a son late in life, they mellow. And that's where I see Protestantism is sort of a mellower God, not as likely to smite after having Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, the Protestants have it's a God that's like wearing loafers and Dockers. And it's
Pete Holmes.
Yeah, it's Pete Holmes. It's Pete Holmes' God. As opposed to like Bill Burr is the Catholic God. Right. I like figuring out religion just using stand-ups.
Oh my gosh.
Specifically Northeastern stand-ups. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
I'm trying to figure out who would be the Jewish comedian god. It wouldn't be Crystal. It wouldn't be too light. He would have Feivish Finkel's voice.
Louis Black. I just got it. It's Louis Black because he'd be saying things like, "Do I get this straight? Let me understand something. You, a post office, wants me to spend money on a stamp, and then I spend money on the stamp. You know, that kind of thing.
Wow, that's good.
You know what I used to do?
The Gomorrans and the Sodomites are having blowjobs.
Yeah. You know what I used to do? I used to do a Lewis. I like Lewis Black, but I used to do a Lewis Black impression where he's getting, because his whole thing was getting worked up over something that's kind of small. And I used to do a Lewis Black impression about things where he's worked up about something you should be worked up about. So I'd be like, "Have you heard about this thing called kidnapping? Someone takes a child. They take a child who is the only son or daughter of these loving parents, and they take them away, and they say you'll only see them alive again if we get money." And it would really make me laugh, because I'd be like, yeah. Just him getting so mad good. About stuff he should get mad about.
Kylie used to always tell me, he would say, "You have no idea how funny the meetings are in Conan's office." And initially I was skeptical. I thought...
You said, "Conan's not that funny. How can he be funny in a meeting?"
I said, "Yeah, everybody's going to laugh at their boss, right?" And then I started listening to the podcast, but also he would tell me the stories, the bits you would do, which was one of my favorites, was the dirty Brian Kiley.
I would do Brian. It's called Brian Kiley at the Apollo. Now, Brian Kiley, again, as you know, tells really clean jokes.
Yes.
And he wears the creased chinos and a blue.
And schmaltzless. Puts no.
Nothing on it. The jokes are just,
perfect. You could read them. They're beautiful, but perfect. Also his character is
perfect
so
jokes,
mild-mannered.
But Kylie, and he'd stand up there, and he's very Catholic, and he tells these wonderful jokes, and he always is doing this with his hands. He doesn't move his body really at all when he's up on stage. Yeah. And so I started doing Kylie at the Apollo, where he's up there, and he's like, "Hi, everybody. Good to see you. I'm Brian Kiley. And the other day, I'm going down on this... going down on this bitch, and I'm eating her out, and he's still the same mannerisms, and then I work my way, you know, down to her asshole, you know, and I start licking out her asshole,
oh god,
and then I'm like, bitch, you've got to wash your ass." And he's killing,
murdering.
But then he goes backstage, kills, and he goes, "Well, that's my time, thank you." And then he goes backstage, and I would always have him sit in a little iron chair and read a Truman biography quietly.
Oh, yes.
And then someone would come and go, "Get out there again, they want more of you." And he'd be like, "Oh, okay." And he'd close it, and he'd go back out there, and he'd go, "The other day, I'm whipping this guy with a..." Like, whatever. It's just fun.
It's weird to hear you even talk like that.
I know.
So
but the
funny
thing is, when I'm channeling Kylie, the whole rule was none of this helps the show. None of this can be on the show. None of it can help the show.
It's just funnier because I know who Brian Kiley is, and I hope people go and like look at his comedy online.
Go
so
look
they
at Brian
see
Kiley.
Yeah.
How much of a just how different it is what you're saying.
I took a shit the other day.
I hate all of this.
Why?
I mean, I love it, but imagining Kylie do it, it's crazy. Because he is the most, I think he might be the most straight-laced person I've ever met in my life.
Yeah.
And just now I have the mental image of him doing
it. Also, you know what I always do? I'd always add him driving home in a very small, sensible square car.
Yeah.
And then going home and pulling the blanket up to his chin to go to sleep. And then the phone rings.
With a nightcap.
With a nightcap. And then, and then the phone rings and it's the club going, "They're screaming for you. They want more." And so he gets out, puts on his blazer, gets back in his little car, goes back there, and then goes out and becomes this other person.
Yeah, I picture him with a pipe carousel.
Yeah, probably.
Pipes. And the other thing is that he's the person who reads the most long books. like Robert Caro, those LBJ books.
Not the person. One of the people.
Really? Yeah.
He and I have that same affliction.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Yeah. I was going to ask. That was one of the questions.
No, we both
I was
do that.
Ask. Did you like that Robert Caro documentary? Have you seen that?
I'm in it.
Oh, yes.
You fucker.
I'm sorry. I got confused because you were also in the...
you thought that was Dennis Leary going on and on about Caro? I'm in documentaries I shouldn't be in about like sex trafficking in Sweden. And they just... And Conan O'Brien
I think you should be in that one.
Well, I was cleared.
I took notes today on things I should bring up. The fact that Rupert Murdoch gave us two of the most important comedy things in history, like the same summer, Simpsons and Get a Life. I was like, this man has done really nothing for the world. But then,
you think,
then these two really important things that brought so much joy and helped me get through all these things that he caused.
And you should, just for a second, because there are going to be people listening or young people that don't know what Get a Life is.
He had this show that was short-lived, of course, because it was so good and so it's time, but it was on for maybe 30 episodes on Fox called Get a Life, and he played Chris Peterson, who was a 30-year-old paperboy who lived at home with his parents, but was arrogant.
Yes.
Arrogant, a little bit nuts, believed in himself, got laid all the time, it was very forward with
women.
Well,
then also it got very...
And so beautifully written, and like Odenkirk wrote on it, Kaufman.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then as the series, later on, they started having him die at the end of every episode, but then not explaining why he was back.
Yes.
And I just always remember as a comedy fan, when people do that, I'm just, yay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Thank 100%. You for trying to.
His dad played his dad, but unlike every other dad in a sitcom, his dad hated him and was rooting for his demise. And it was incredible.
There's a couple of things that I want to make sure I talk to you about. Your obsession with comedy or your interest in comedy goes way back to when you were a kid, and you got to do something that I dreamed of doing but never got to do, which is you got to go to a live taping of Johnny Carson's Tonight Show.
Oh, yeah.
And that's something I never experienced. Can you tell me what that was like?
Yes. I was 13. I had just been bar mitzvahed, and my brother Max had gone to spring break and been bumped 3 times. And back then in the 19...
From the audience.
No, I'm sorry. That made it sound like my... Brother Max was a guest on the Tonight Show with Carson. No, he'd been bumped by the airline.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Flying on spring break. And so he had gotten these tickets. I don't know if they were round trip, but they afforded my mother and I to go to Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. My brother couldn't use them because he was starting a job in Florida. So he gave them to us. We used them to go to Los Angeles, stayed with my cousin Della. We waited in line and got tickets to get into but I was 13. You had to be 16 to get into a live taping, but I was already 5'11" or almost 6 feet.
Right.
And so my mother said he's 16. And then I got in and I said, oh my God, we made it. And then an usher said, excuse me, how old are you? And my mother got right in her face and she said, do you think I would take a child into something as important as the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson? And my mother, I mean, the lying.
God bless her.
Yeah. Oh, wow. She really got
I want
face.
Your job. It'd be great if she got that kid fired and ruined her life.
She was so convincing. I felt like I was 16. Yeah. I had just turned 13. And anyhow, it couldn't have been a better. First of all, Johnny did the monologue and he screwed up one of the lines and retook it. And then when they went to break, he said, oh, I really blew the shit out of that joke. And I said, oh my gosh, he swore.
Yeah.
And you didn't hear Johnny Carson.
You know what? I talked to Robert Smigel, told me that he went to a taping of Johnny Carson, and Johnny Carson, when he knew it wouldn't, because it was pre-taped, said shit in front of the crowd and they went wild.
Wow.
Back then, the idea of someone that you knew on TV that intimately saying the word shit was impossible.
Yes.
And so that must have been electrifying.
It was electrifying. And then the guest was Carrie Fisher and Gary Shandling.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Yeah. So Princess Leia at her Leia-ist. And then
and Gary at his Shandling-ist.
Oh, my gosh. And then this comedian who I only knew from the Tonight Show. And he was so funny. And then he did this bit with, it wasn't a bit, I guess, but it came off as a bit with Carrie Fisher, where he says, I know your parents, Debbie Reynolds and Eddie Fisher. Do you know my parents, Irv and Muriel Shandling? And, oh my, and I was in love. I was like, here's this guy who's Jewish, neurotic, and miserable, yet he's flirting with Carrie Fisher. And it was that was the thing that I always found so interesting about comedians. They really had nothing to speak of in terms of being attractive to women, but they had all this confidence in it, and it just really captured me at a very, very young age. I was like, that is the only way I'm ever going to get married, is if I'm super funny like Shandling or somebody like that.
All kids throughout history take an inventory early on. When I found out that I could make people laugh, thinking, all right, I've got this. I'm going to develop the fuck out of this.
Yes.
I'm going to.
Yes.
Mostly being interested in, I want that girl to like me. And then the big barrier is she's laughing really hard, but I see her going to the dance with that other guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He has no comedy, but he has a developed body.
Yeah.
Who needs that?
Yeah.
My shallow chest should be enough for anyone.
And I remember,
my wasted legs? What's wrong with these? My 19th century cough? The little bits of pink foam from dissolving lung? What's wrong with that?
Why are you saying those things, though?
My dad took care of everyone but me. A brilliant scientist who never noticed that I was dying of consumption.
You were the control experiment.
I was the control experiment.
I think consumption is my favorite old-timey disease, because a lot of people will go tuberculosis, but the people who are familiar go consumption.
Consumption. Also,
what?
It's true. You and I speak the exact same language. I like that people used to have stuff called the flux.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And, or they'd call you a lunger.
If
you had it, if you had
a lung, if you had consumption, they'd call you a lunger.
Yeah.
But also, I love that when you got sick back then, they would apply a poultice. They would apply a mustard poultice to your chest, which basically means, you know, just covering your chest with mustard.
Vapo rub.
Yeah, exactly. but they did it for anything. Like, someone would get shot in the head. I believe when Lincoln was dying of a bullet the size of an Oreo cookie in his brain, they were like, apply a poultice. A mustard poultice will save the president.
Did it work?
Kinda. Because when he died, he smelled like a hot dog. And people weren't quite as sad.
I'm sure there were other poultices. There was the mustard.
I always hear about mustard.
The remoulade poultice. The tapenade poultice. that way he doesn't pull through, but we have a dip. We have a dipping sauce.
No, at the
end, Triscuits.
After Lincoln died, everyone sat around and they were very sad. And Seward said, now he belongs to the ages. And then somehow someone produced a bag of tortilla chips. And they just started dipping into this stuff. Little salsa.
Oh my gosh.
So they all
funny.
Just start crunching. Oh my God. Mary Lincoln comes in. What are you doing? Well, we can't let this go to waste. The coffin isn't here yet. I want to make sure I mention your book, too. You've been busy. You have a new memoir.
I didn't want to be a schnorrer, which is a Yiddish term meaning like
I learned
kid,
that word
like
from
taker.
Groucho Marx.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he used to sing a song about being, I'm not a schnorrer, which
I think was, wow.
Yeah, Captain Spaulding, I think, has the word schnorrer in it. My name is Captain Spaulding, the African explorer. I'm no schnorrer. Hooray,
oh,
hooray,
I love
hooray.
That. Oh,
and I remember as a kid, as being a huge fan of the Marx Brothers and thinking, schnorrer, what's schnorrer?
Yeah.
And then someone explained it to me.
Oh, that's a great feeling for a Yiddish, well, a Jewish person who knows some Yiddish to explain it to somebody, because when you show interest, we get very excited.
Yeah. So Misfit, Growing Up Awkward in the 80s, is your memoir.
Yes.
And was this cathartic for you? Because you've famously talked about it a lot. And I think, you know, people say, oh, it's brave. And I think it's like, well, it's great that you talk about your struggles with mental health. And I applaud that. But it's that you do it so with so much empathy.
Oh,
and you do it so intelligently, and you're funny about it.
Oh, thanks.
And I think that is a Man, that's a bomb. That's worth that's worth all the Prozac in the world, you know?
I mean, it was something that I aspired to over the years to finally get to a point where I was far enough away from it that and also that it was sort of a success story of I overcame this, because in the midst of it, I wasn't able to write about it. And also my brain wasn't working well enough and I didn't have enough confidence, but I was so elated and grateful to be on the other side of my depression, which I received ECT about 4 months before I did that abbreviating the states thing.
And really?
Yeah.
And so ECT,
the electroconvulsive therapy in, I was inpatient in Weill Cornell Hospital, New York Presbyterian in Manhattan. And then—
And you said one of the patients actually recognized
me from TV. And yeah, he said, am I crazy? Are you Gary Goldman? Which is, I mean, you can write
both.
An entire act.
Apparently both.
Yeah. You are crazy, but I'm getting that from context.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's not because you think I'm Gary Goldman, although I would say maybe shoot higher for who you're imagining. You can imagine anybody.
Napoleon, yeah. So many people to aim for.
Yes, or yeah. And so anyhow, I was so grateful, and I wanted to tell the story because I wanted to share that there's hope, because that was one thing my doctor and my wife never gave up on me, but I gave up on myself many, many times. I kept going through the motions and trying new medicine and treatments, and ECT finally was the thing that worked in the hospitalization, and it got me to a level that I had never experienced in my life. I had spent my entire life sort of working at 70, 75%, sometimes 80% if I could get some momentum. And then it had kind of a cycle where I would be productive for 9 months and then I would fall apart and have to start all over again. Mm-hmm. So it was very frustrating. But since I have been, I guess I would say in remission, that was probably October of 2017, I've had the most joy and experienced life in a way without the heaviness and the fatigue that accompanied a lot of my depressive episodes. So I'm so grateful. So I was happy to share this story so that it would give some people hope, because what I didn't realize is that people thought, I used to think when somebody famous would either commit suicide or come out about being depressed, I would say, why would that person be depressed? And I didn't realize that I could be that for some people, that some people would say, oh, if he can get depressed, then it's not a matter of accomplishing something. Mm-hmm. It's a matter of chemistry.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that's very hard for people to understand, because the same thing you're trying to work with is telling you this isn't chemistry. It's you. You're lazy. You're dumb. You're untalented. So it was important that I was able to get that story
out. I'm guilty of the same thing when I was a kid, or even well into my teens and 20s, when I would hear about a brilliant author or just a performer I loved, or anyone getting really depressed. And I would think, but I don't understand.
Yeah. Elvis?
Why would Elvis be depressed?
Yeah.
Why would anyone who has that be depressed? And then, you know, as you go through life, you realize that material things, success or getting recognized, it's nice.
Yeah.
But it is really true that it doesn't have anything to do with your brain chemistry. And sometimes it can exacerbate it and make it feel worse.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, I have this. And
this was supposed to be the thing that made me feel good about myself.
Yeah. So many people get into comedy or get into this business because they think, once I get that and everyone knows who I am and I'm driving a car that looks like that, then all my problems will be over. And when it doesn't happen, rage.
Painful.
Rage.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about myself.
But it was...
mostly that the car isn't nicer.
Oh, well, okay.
I mean, come on. Mm. Tesla's nice, but I want a Bugatti. And I never got one! And that fucking sled! Sprawled out, but it's not mine!
Did the toboggan have a name?
Yeah, exactly. That when I die, I'm just going to say toboggan. It'll be like, all these reporters will be scattered.
Bobo.
Yeah. Toboggan. Yeah, whatever. Glide right. You are, I'll just say it again. Pleasure to know you.
Oh, that's so nice to hear. I really feel the same way. You've brought me so much joy.
I really admire you because you're such a highly intelligent and empathetic comedian, and you do such beautiful work. You've been through a lot, which makes me sad, but also you've come through the other side, and you're very honest about it. I think it's going to help a lot of people. But mostly, if I didn't know any of this, I watch these specials. I watch your comedy. Every time I've seen you perform, I think, man, that guy is so gifted. He thinks so differently than everyone else. And he's so, everything is so crafted and beautifully done, the work that goes into it. So thank you.
Oh,
it, what you do is, as they always say, a mitzvah.
I'm pinching myself because that means so much to me. But also, and this was one of the things I wanted to mention, just the exposure you gave me on that show all those times was, I mean, it changed my life and it gave me a touring career. So I'm so grateful for what you've brought to me, even before I was on the show. Just the joy in knowing that, oh, there are other people who find this funny. And
right,
I thought it was
right.
Just
Well, we found each other.
Yeah.
And now
yeah.
we're two gangly, I'm depressed very... guys from Massachusetts who know each other.
Who love to read.
Who love to read. Yay, us.
Yeah.
There aren't enough. Hey, Gary, God bless.
Thank you.
Thank
this
you
was so
and
wonderful.
We'll see you
Thank
again.
You.
I got to say, everywhere I go, people are talking about Monopoly Go. And for good reason. It's an absolute hit.
Yeah. I love Monopoly.
People love Monopoly. And look, Monopoly's been around for a very long time. It's one of the oldest board games ever. Okay?
Okay.
But lately I walk around and I just hear like, Monopoly Go, Monopoly Go, Monopoly Go. And I'm like, hey, what's going on? What are you guys talking about? And they say, we're playing Monopoly Go. You can play it with your family, your friends. It's a straight delight. There's always something new to do. Partner events where you can build on each other's boards and crazy tournaments with team events you can recruit your friends for, or you can just compete to outdo them all on the leaderboards.
Mm.
And when you're not messing with your family and friends, Monopoly Go is always throwing new stuff at you. They have taken Monopoly to the next level. I didn't think Monopoly had to go to the next level, but they did. There's timed events like massive multipliers for all your winnings and challenges like treasure hunts or money sprees that have fun new mini games, plus with tons of rewards to collect, like stickers for trading with friends and hilarious emojis that are perfect for gloating, there's always a reason to dip back in.
Yeah.
Man, they cracked it, you know?
They did.
So join the fun. Download Monopoly Go now free on the App Store and Google Play. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all sometimes have issues or things we need to talk about, get off our chest. I have that all the time. Don't you, Sona?
I do.
Yeah. And we need people to talk to. And we carry around different stressors. We carry big stressors. We carry small stressors. I was raised in a culture where you're supposed to kind of bottle it up. And I've learned over time that that's not the best thing to do. If you do let things rattle around in there for a while without talking it out, it can affect your life very negatively. Well, therapy is a safe space where you can get things off your chest, figure out how to work through whatever is weighing you down. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. BetterHelp's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. A lot of people have a barrier towards getting therapy because they think, well, I don't know, I've got to find the person, talk to them. What if it's not a good match? Then it's awkward. None of that. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and then you switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. So get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Conan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Conan.
We haven't done a State of the Podcast in a while, and I think it's important for the State of the Podcast that we do a State of the Podcast.
I'd be convinced if you had just said State of the Podcast one more time, but I agree. I think we should take stock. You know, how are we doing? And I think also self-criticism is very valuable. It's good for us to really kick the tires on this thing and make sure that we're living up to people's expectations. How do we proceed?
Well, as we always do, we bring in Adam Sachs. Mm-hmm. He runs this place. He makes it happen. He makes it work. He does the dance that keeps the floor thumping.
Yeah.
So, Adam.
Awful.
Where
awful,
are we?
Awful. Awful monologue.
Wasn't. Well,
yeah.
So, state of the podcast. I brought some notes with me. We are 5 years in.
Mm. It's 5 years
November 19th, 2018 was our first episode, the release of our first episode with Will Ferrell. Right? So, we are 5 years in. Over 400 episodes.
Wow. Are we over 400 episodes? Wow.
I believe that's right if we count the fan episodes and our
which we
interview.
Do. Sure. Those are important.
Yeah. Yeah. So, over 400 episodes. And we're actually seeing growth. Still, which is pretty amazing.
Still seeing growth.
Yes.
So people have been listening to this and more people are still showing up.
More people are showing up. And because the catalog is so evergreen, you know, the episodes that we recorded 5 years ago still hold up. People show up and then they go back and they listen to the back catalog. So on a given month, we get 40% of our listens happening on old episodes.
People are telling friends, but in a good way.
Yeah, they're in a good way.
That's my first experience with that in show business.
Mm-hmm.
My previous career was, you got to check this guy out.
They're warning people.
Yeah, so that you don't accidentally stumble on him. You need to know. No, but all kidding aside, that's very exciting. I will say that we made this decision to try and it's also just naturally the kind of comedy I like, but we're not always talking about the day's events. And in fact, anytime a guest starts to say, isn't it funny that today in the news, I reach over the table and slap them.
Yeah.
There's okay. Also, we're still getting like crazy, amazing guests that, you know, are coming on for the first time. Even recently, we've had Arnold Schwarzenegger, Harrison Ford, Steve Martin, Sir Paul McCartney, yeah. Kelly Clarkson.
And you know what's great? Schwarzenegger, we didn't even invite him. And we tried to keep him out of the building. He's like, I'm coming in. You're listening. Ow! And we, remember? And I said, no, we're here. We're talking to Ted Danson. He's like, it's the house. It's going to be me. And he smashed his way through.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Sorry, yeah. Did you need more from me?
No, you're giving me what you always give me.
You know, I just have so much to add to this.
Well another...
Okay.
So the other thing I wanted to bring up, which is interesting, is the industry has evolved. If we look back 5 years,
yep.
If you think about the advertisers we had at the beginning, it was mostly what are called direct response advertisers, DR advertisers, where oftentimes they're like digital advertisers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Fracture Prints was a good example. Remember the back scratcher?
I miss Fracture.
Yes. Aww. And they have an offer code, right? Offer code Conan, or you go to this specific URL, and that's how they know if the ad is working, it's attribution.
So we've grown out of that now.
We still have plenty of them, but we've gotten into more brands, big brands, and that's I think.
Listen, I like that things are moving in the right direction, but sometimes you're the victim of your success. And I will say, I mean, Fracture. That was a great company.
Do they still exist?
yes. No, they do.
But,
well,
you know,
for Conan's 60th birthday, I got him a Fracture print.
Oh, that's right. Can we just edit that so it's 40th? And anyway,
we're the same age.
but you know, thank you. No, it's fun being, I guess I'm 41 now. There's a thing that can happen sometimes in life where, yes, you've had good fortune, but you miss that old little apartment you used to live in. Remember where the shower didn't quite work, but boy, did we have good times in that old little. And that's how I think of the Fracture Print ads.
Well, it's funny you say that because the brand. So now we have a lot of brand advertisers. We have, you know, Miller Lite, Chevy, mm-hmm. these big brands that don't have.
And by the way, those are terrific products.
They're fantastic. but brand advertisers, so direct response advertisers don't necessarily, they're not that sensitive about the content that they're advertising on. They just, for the most part, care that the ad works. They want the ROI, the return on the investment. So,
God, do you ever just speak normally?
I know.
I'm getting somewhere.
Is this
so,
what it's like in the bedroom?
Yeah. But brand advertisers really care about associating with talent, right? Uh-huh. And so they do what they have been doing more and more is brand safety analysis. And I actually brought some brand safety analysis for Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend.
Boy, you're fun at a holiday
Here's
party.
Here's my question, though, because he was on television for like 20 years before the podcast. That brand wasn't enough.
Well, that's okay. A good question.
Yeah.
So you can see how we rank here.
Thanks, Sona.
Oh,
thank
you. This is funny.
Okay. All right. So this is.
This is mostly.
What is this now? Explain what's happening. Okay. Can you take a second and explain what this is?
This is our brand safety analysis that's done, I think, primarily by like AI and transcription. So transcription is done on the podcast, and then some algorithm decides how brand safe the show is.
And this is real.
This is real.
These are real numbers.
These are our real ratings.
Right.
This is amazing.
On the show. And so brand advertisers, when they're deciding whether they want to advertise on a specific podcast, will look at these ratings and decide if the show is safe for them to be associated with.
Okay. All right. So medium, adult sexual explicit content.
That seems low.
Is that seems very low.
Seems
it
really
says
low.
It's
we
only
talk a
four
about dicks and stuff.
Oh, well, but down here, obscenity and profanity, it's in the red for 83% and 71% high risk.
Yeah. So we're killing it with obscenity and profanity.
Yeah,
maybe this is just all our clinical talk. Whenever we
you
say
know what
penis
I don't like
vagina
hate
instead
speech.
Of cockaroo and
hate speech, 7%.
That's you. Acts of aggression. That's
acts of aggression.
All that's you.
I don't all like, because there's no hate speech here, but there is me routinely trying to take a swat at somebody.
You're also crime and violence because you say the word murder on a regular
that's
basis.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, you're 11% high risk.
Wait a minute. Military conflict.
Do you want to just run down what the sheet says to give us kind of an overview? Of those
well, adult and sexual explicit content, 4%. Alcohol, 2%. These are risks.
High risk, 0%.
For suitability. Crime and violence, 12%. Wow. Death or injury, 3%. Relatively low.
Remember one time we did a segment about robbing a bank and what would our masks be? So yes, things like that are factored in. Okay.
Death or injury, 3%. Epidemic, 3%. Hate speech and acts of aggression, 7%. It's a little high for me. Illegal drugs, 1%. We don't really talk about drugs a lot.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, we do.
Sona?
But those aren't illegal.
Smoking that
weed. They're not illegal. Everything you do is legal.
Yeah, that's true.
Obscenity and profanity, 83%.
Wow.
Jeez.
Zus.
Christ. Fuck, that's a high number.
Fuck.
Tobacco, e-cigarettes, vaping, 0%.
Well, now it's going to be in there, though. Will it factor this in?
Oh, yeah, now it's going to be in there.
Look at this. This is a category. Violation of human rights.
Oh, that's just us working for you.
Yeah, that's you.
It's a violation of human rights to work here, and that's 1%.
I don't understand military conflict.
Yeah, what is military conflict?
Well, we talk about World War II comes up quite a bit.
I mean,
the term Nazi will pop up every once in a while.
I think it is like just talking about
World War II. Yeah. Basically, World War II facts, trivia, Stalin comes up a lot.
Yeah.
But is this a concern that us discussing these things right now will bump these numbers up?
I hadn't thought of it,
and
but
then
yeah,
next year when we do this again, it'll compound?
I think so.
Boobies.
Nazi.
Vagine,
but I think so. The truth is, like, this is heroin. More. Sona made a really, really important point, which is like, you were on TV for 28 years.
Yep.
Your brand is established.
Yes.
You had advertisers on that show.
Yes,
so
I did.
So it was a brand safe show. You're brand safe talent. This really is more done for talent that is maybe lesser known to, you know, advertisers when they're making the decision if they want to advertise on a specific show.
I see.
But I did think that you would just find it interesting that we're being
analyzed
right
now. What do you take away from this?
I actually take away that there is a high sensitivity among advertisers now, higher than ever, it seems, to be associated with brand safe content. Mm-hmm. So I think for us, we should just be monitoring your language, primarily everyone's language here, and thinking of these categories every time we go into an interview or do a segment.
Now, but
if I'm told not to do something, I just want to do it
now,
more.
Adam, you're coming dangerously close to being the man censoring the artist here. So
also, I don't think I use profanity. I mean, cockaroo, is that really profanity?
I don't know.
I love that answer. I love the way you said it. I don't know.
Well, there was talk of gerbils. Is all kind of a
not
hidden,
unless you really get into what it's all about.
It's obscene and
I don't think
profane.
This thing understands context either.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't just understand literal. Context. So talk of gerbils is quite a that could be a children's story.
But it
it could
might
be
take gerbils and think Joseph Gerbils and make it a Nazi thing. You know
no,
I mean?
That's Goebbels.
Well,
they
written,
know
it's written in a transcript. It doesn't know.
It does. It knows the difference. They're spelled completely differently. It's ridiculous. I think the state of the conflict. I think the state of the show.
Oh, our numbers are going up on military conflict.
I think the show is doing well.
It's
we
doing
are
great.
Marching forward. We're like the allies pushing in to France. We're pushing forward. We're moving
we're
our way.
Penetrating.
Mm. Okay. Yeah.
That hole.
We're having sex with the other army.
Listen, don't ruin a good thing.
I'm pleased. And I feel
it's a good thing.
I do nothing but say I have gratitude that we've been doing this for 5 years. I've been having a very good time. I love doing this with you people. I got to learn your names.
So
and
close.
I think we should maybe tone down the pee pee poo poo a little bit.
You got it, cockface.
But I do want us to, you know, keep getting more and more brand friendly. I really do. I want to just keep chiseling away.
But pee-pee and poo-poo is what we are. That's who we are as people. Yeah.
This what a and... wonderful story this is.
No, but that's just what we who we are. I feel like you're telling us to change ourselves.
I'd like the Hallmark Channel to one day advertise with us. Yeah. And I think and to get that, and probably also Disneyland. So to get those kind of brands, those are the ones I really want. We need to really shape it up. Yeah.
I think we definitely need to check back in. We need to do quarterly State of the Podcast and see the trend of the numbers.
That's
Can we
idea.
Do that?
Yeah.
Okay. 83%.
Yeah.
That's high. It's red.
83% obscenity and profanity. Let's get that number down and let's get violation of human rights way up. I don't know how, but we will.
Conan O'Brien needs a friend. With Conan O'Brien, Sonam Ovsesian, and Matt Gourley. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Nick Liao, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Cody Fisher at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Take it away, Jimmy. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. Engineering by Eduardo Perez. Additional production support by Mars Melnick. Talent booking by Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Britt Kahn. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 669-587-2847 and leave a message. It, too, could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend wherever fine podcasts are downloaded.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
On this episode of Plant Killers, we'll explore one nation's most notorious fruit and vegetable killer, bad dirt. What makes bad dirt so bad? The answer? The ingredients. But fear not, true crime enthusiasts. This story has a happy ending. New Miracle-Gro Organic Raised Bed and Garden Soil. It's made with quality organic ingredients from upcycled green waste like compost and aged bark. Unlike the other guys who can't say the same. Looks like bad dirt's murdering days are over, thanks to Miracle-Gro. Join us next time on Plant Killers.